Good morning, everybody. Welcome. Thank you very much for coming. It's nice to see everybody. Welcome to everybody who's here on Zoom as well. We don't forget about our Zoom listeners. Looking ahead just a couple of weeks, first of all, next week, Be'ezrat Hashem, we'll be having a shir. I like to prepare new material for Pesach so that we can all feel fresh and spring cleaned and ready. And therefore, I'd like to talk next week about a topic that we haven't ever dealt with before, which is absolutely fascinating, which is to do with karpas at the Seder. There's a surprising amount to talk about karpas. A few years ago, we did charoses. So this year, just to get you in the culinary mood, we're going to do karpas. And 2 weeks from today, which is Erev Pesach, I will be giving a shir, please God. Hopefully the cleaning and the heavy lifting should be behind us all bit by then. And just a little bit of cooking to do, maybe. But if you want to have a break or if you want to join us on Zoom on Wednesday, 2 weeks from now, we will be having a shir on the origins and structure of the Haggadah, which hopefully will be, again, something we have not dealt with before. But today we'll be dealing with a topic which continues from last week, which I'll introduce in a moment. Let me first ask you, please, if you could turn your phones off. Because every week I ask this, and every week someone's phone goes off as a chazaka. I think that's happened every week forever. And also, if I could remind you to keep your masks on, and also thank the sponsors. This year is sponsored for the whole of the 2022 academic year. Le'ilu Nishmas Brana Bat Bendit and Zeli Ben Kalman. We're very grateful for the sponsorship, and hope that the shi will be Le'ilu Nishmatam. So it's nice to have a nice crowd here today. It's good to see you all. I start today's shiur with a riddle. What have the following four got in common? A drunken dog, an elephant, earwax, and we'll see the other one coming up shortly. A drunken dog, an elephant, earwax, and a chalitza shoe. What have a chalitza shoe, a drunken dog, an elephant, and earwax all got in common with each other? And the answer is, they're all part of today's shir. Even though you are expecting a shir on cosmetics on Pesach, and that's what you're getting, we'll see that all of those items make a guest appearance in most unexpected contexts. Let's catch up from last week. Last week we learnt about medication and chametz. And I just summarised for you at the top of the page the key points that we took away from last week. Number one, there's a Torah prohibition to eat chametz. No surprises there. Number two, there's a Torah prohibition to get benefit from chametz. Number three, the prohibitions only apply if the chametz is eaten in the normal manner or the benefit is received in the normal manner. And we talked last week about swallowing something whole. Is that normal? Is that not normal? Fourthly, the chametz which is rendered fully inedible, what's called in halacha nifsel me'achilas kalef. Even a dog wouldn't eat it, meaning you wouldn't even relate to it as dog food. So that is no longer called food on Pesach, and you're allowed to get benefit from it. However, you're still not allowed to eat it. Why not? If it's not food anymore, it's totally inedible. Because, and we learned, there's a principle of achshavei. Achshavei, we learned that the Rosh paskens this, Shulchan Aruch paskens this, that even though it's inedible, objectively, if you choose to eat it, then that's, you've elevated it. And I brought in the footnote here, the origins of that idea is, there's a Gemara in Shavuot that says if somebody makes an oath that they're not going to eat a specific item which is already objectively inedible, and then they eat it, that's called breaking the oath. Ah, but it's inedible. But by eating it, you've shown that you relate to it as edible. And we saw that there's a principle in halacha like that on Pesach too. However, we saw also last week that most poskim do not consider achshavei related to medication. Swallowing a tablet, leaving aside, you're swallowing it in an abnormal way to normal eating. That's not called elevating it. The tablet is a tablet. It's medication. It's not food. So that we learned last week. Today, I'd like to get to the issue of cosmetics because many poskim raise concerns about cosmetics of all kinds, and I listed here creams, ointments, salves, powder, sticks, colognes, perfumes, deodorants in liquid, stick, spray, roll-on form, shaving lotion, eyeshadow, eyeliner, blush, mouthwash, lipstick, and toothpaste. I'm not going to talk in detail about all of those. My knowledge of some of them is a little bit thin. But nevertheless, you'll know that some poskim will say, you have to put the perfume away for Pesach. You have to put the mouthwash away. You have to have Pesach, kosher le Pesach, items of this nature. And we're going to ask today why. Why do some people say that? Why do some poskim say you don't have to do that? And where everybody stands on this matter. So let's start with just a few minutes talking about soap. What is there to say about soap? Soap in halacha. So you'll be interested to hear in Malachi, there is a pasuk in the last chapter of Malachi, which says, number one, Mi mechalkel et yom bo'o. Who will be able to abide by the day of his coming, the end of days when God will appear to avenge the righteous and punish the wicked, etc. Umi ha'omed behera oto. Who will be able to stand when he appears? What will God be like? Kihu ke'esh metzaref, like a purifying fire. Ukeborit mechapsim. Borit, or Boris, if you're Ashkenazi or Russian. Okay? Borit mechapsim. Okay? What is borit? So Rashi says here, number two. Keborit mechapsim. Keborit shel mechapsim, a soap of some kind of the launderers. Shema'avir et kol haketem. It gets rid of stains. Now, ketem is a stain on a garment, not usually a stain on your body. And we'll see that soap was not used back in those days to clean people's bodies, but to clean material. Ken ya'avir et kol harasha'a. So too, God will cleanse away all of the evil. Borit, what is borit, says Rashi? Esevhu, it's a kind of herbal origin. Interesting, he says it's vegetable origin, not animal origin. Shemarvet haketim, he takes away ketim, and balaz, and he says in French, herbe sabonniere. Okay, so herb is a herb, okay, herb. Sabonniere, you'll already find a sabon origin there, some kind of soapy vegetable origin. Veloshen boris dava hametzachzech umetaher. The word borit is from the word bar, kebare levav. Bar levav, we talk about mi yale bahar Hashem, the kikapayim, or bar levav, the cleansed of heart. So boris is from the word to clean. So you see it's here in Malachi. It's here also, you see it also in Yirmiyahu. They are mentions of soap there. I brought you a little bit of the history of soap here in Mesopotamia. Most soap was actually not, like Rashi says, made from vegetable origins, but made from, and still is, we'll see, made from fat. The fat from slaughtered cattle, cows, sheep, goat, mixed together with some kind of ashes. Pliny the Elder, back in Rome, describes soap as made from tallow, from beef fat and ashes. But as I said, people usually use this for material, not on their bodies. On their bodies, people used to bathe in water and then smear themselves in oil and then scrape the oil gently off their skin. That got rid of the grime, or at least they thought it did. Only in the Middle Ages did people started having real vegetable origin soap. We see from Rashi, they got soap. There was such a thing as soap from vegetable oils and vegetable origins. In the 20th century, people got more into using soap for personal hygienes. And of course, that's mostly what we use soap, certainly in terms of our own showering now, etc. But still, soap tends to be made from animal fat. During the First World War, Second World War, there were shortages of animal fat. People went more to other things, coconut oil, olive oil, etc. But if you just flip over the page, I brought you here. Today, commercially manufactured soap is a highly specialized product. However, it is still made with animal fats. Even soap today, which says natural origins, unless you have vegetarian soap, there are people who get vegetarian soap. Soap tends to be made from animal fats. I brought you ivory soap. Don't know if they still make ivory soap. I think they do. I brought you, in case you're interested, in the footnote there, the ingredients of ivory soap. When you read this, you'll probably never want to use it again. It had all sorts of things. I brought you a little bit from the OU website a few years ago, that they called up ivory and they asked what's in their soap, and they said it is still made largely from discarded tallow from beef and pork. That is what goes into ivory soap, and even though it smells very nice, it didn't necessarily come from the same kind of thing that it smells like now. Even the bubbles in your bubble bath, and I'm sorry to burst your bubble here, but even the bubbles in your bubble bath contain hydrolyzed animal collagen to stop them from popping while they float on the hot water, and this tends to be made from the tendons of non-kosher animals. So the next time you have a relaxing bubble bath, just think of how many animals died so that your bubbles didn't need to pop on the surface of the water. Okay, So a lot of animal products still go into soap. What about other cosmetics? So I listed you here. Cosmetics are as old as people in ancient Egypt up until the modern day. Lipstick dyes tended to be made from ground carmine beetles, cochineal, which is the red color, which often went into lipsticks. Other cosmetics from other things I brought you here, beeswax, olive oil, rose water, later Vaseline, lanolin were added as well, and I brought you some of the ingredients of lipsticks today. And lipsticks now get their colors from various origins. Some are organic, some are inorganic. They are basically the ingredients that make up cosmetics. Do any of those give us any cashless issues? Now, you may not like the idea of lathering your arms in pork fat, but nevertheless, is this a cashless problem or is this not? So, chaylev, fats that come from kosher animals, kosher domesticated animals, is not kosher. And all products from non-kosher animals, whether it's a non-kosher species like a horse or a pig, or whether it's just a not kosher animal like a navela that wasn't slaughtered properly, obviously none of these animals that go into the products that go into the cosmetics have been slaughtered properly. They're all navelas or trafas or trafe animals. All of those products are not kosher, but that's fine because you're not eating them. And the prohibition of kashrus is to not eat. You are allowed to get benefit from chaylev. You are allowed to get benefit from non-kosher products. You're not allowed to be a pig farmer. That's a different question. But if somebody gives you for Christmas, whatever, a big leg of ham or something like that, you're allowed to give it to a non-Jewish person as a gift, set it on, whatever. You are allowed to get benefit from non-kosher food. You're not allowed to get benefit from chaylev, from a shura niskal, from an ox that has to be slaughtered. We talked about this, it's killed because it killed somebody, or from chametz, and we'll see chametz is one of the exceptions here you are not even allowed to get benefit from. So most of the year, apparently, we won't be having a problem, but on Pesach we might. Yes, sir? Basar v'chalav. Also, you're not allowed to get benefit from, but as far as I'm aware, basar v'chalav is not going to be a cosmetic issue for us today. There is a shiloh whether you're allowed to get to use any non-kosher animal for a mitzvah, which is not what we're talking about. We're talking about eating them or using them, but can you use it for a mitzvah? And there is a principle of called mutar beficha, which is learned with tefillin. The tefillin have to be made, because it's a java shepherd kedusha, tefillin have to be made from an animal, from skin of a kosher shechted animal. You cannot use a trefa animal's skin to make your tefillin straps, etc. Yes. Correct. We'll get to Shabbos candles soon, and therefore there's a discussion. The Magen Avraham suggests that no mitzvah, including Shabbos candles, Hanukkah candles, should be made from a treif ingredient. And of course, that is where the discussion, you can either tick them off on your bingo card today, that is where the elephant comes in. Because the Noda Yehuda asks, well, how could it be then that the Gemara says you can use an elephant for a wall of a sukkah? If you're not allowed to use a non-kosher animal for a mitzvah, how is that possible? There's a discussion about a chalitza shoe, is number two on your list, made from a treif skin, from an animal that wasn't shechted properly. Can you use that for chalitza? Or is it just davar shebekedusha? Is it just tefillin, mezuzahs, etc., sifrei Torah that have to be made from kosher skins? Yes, sir?
Even shampoo.
Right, right. And of course, gelatin... Gelatin is a fascinating question. We had a whole shir on gelatin, because maybe gelatin's even mutter to eat. Maybe you can even eat gelatin even though it came from pork fat, pork bones or horse bones, because it has been rendered into an inedible substance and then consolidated into a substance which you can eat. And there are many people say no, some people say yes, I'm not getting into that now, but you're right.
Mad cows.
Yes, oh, that was a whole mad cows. Right. Anyone who comes from Europe from the 1980s, correct. Correct.
They remove the gelatin in
all. Right. They still will not let me give blood in Israel, even though I'm a universal donor, because they have a chashash deep down that I may be a mad cow, just waiting to reveal myself. They don't know what to do with me if I am, okay? My wife's sister sent her a wonderful birthday card a couple of years ago where two cows were talking to each other. One said, "Aren't you worried about mad cow disease?" And the other said, "Why should I worry? I'm a penguin." Which appeals to my wife's sense of humor. Anyway, we must carry on, because it is not Purim, it's nearly Pesach. However, what if you accidentally eat products that you didn't mean to eat? You put lipstick on, let's say that's made from a treif substance, You can use a trace substance, it's not basar v'chalav, but it might go in your mouth, or shampoo might go in your mouth, or soap might go in your mouth. So here we see in Shulchan Aruch number 3, the Shulchan Aruch says, mutzel lishaf befiv, you're allowed to sniff with your nose, reach yayin nesech, the smell of wine which is treif wine, it's not kosher wine, derech nekev, through the hole in the barrel, shebechaves, it holds a hole in the barrel, leidayin hutayv, you've got wine, you're a wine dealer, you're not going to drink this wine, but you're selling it on to non-Jews, and you want to check, you want to open up the plug and give it a sniff to see if it's okay. Are you allowed to smell treifus? The answer is tarfus. The answer is yes, perfectly mutter. Says the Ramah, aval osel atoma, we can't put it in your mouth. Afal pisha ain a boiler, even if you're not going to swallow it, even if you're going to spit it out, you can't put treif food in your mouth to taste it, even if you're going to spit it out. That's osel. Now, we'll see, including the wine. But halachically observant wine tasters don't. Meaning you can put it in, you can physically put it in your mouth and spit it out, but halachically you're not allowed to. So here you see you're not allowed to be a wine taster for a treif wine organizer. You'd have to be a kosher wine taster. I mean, it might limit your career options, but hopefully you'll work that out. However, cosmetics are not food. This Ramos talking about putting food in my mouth and spitting it out. I'm talking about getting soap in my mouth and spitting it out, and we'll see that almost all poskim say that therefore this is not a problem. However, on Pesach, we'll have to come back to soon, it's not just about eating, it's about benefiting. And there's no question if I shampoo my hair or I put soap on my skin, I am benefiting. That's clearly a benefit. We're going to come to that in about 10 or 15 minutes. But first, I'd like to raise another issue which applies potentially, which we don't talk about, I've never talked about in this shiur, which is sicha kashtia. What does that mean? There is a halachic principle that if I put something on my skin, that is halachically equivalent to drinking it. And therefore, if it is something that I'm not allowed to drink or eat, I'm not allowed to put it on my skin either. Is that going to be a problem for our soaps? Because I'm certainly not allowed to eat pork fat. Am I allowed, therefore, to put it on my skin? I may be allowed to benefit from it, but is this equivalent to eating? Where does this come from? Seeing a few raised eyebrows, never heard this idea before. Let's have a look in number 4. Says the Mishnah, Minayin l'sicha shehi kashtia b'yom kippurim. How do I know that sicha, anointing with oil on your body, is equivalent to drinking on Yom Kippur? Afal pi she'en raya l'davar, even though there is no direct proof directly from the Torah, zeicha l'davar, there is a zeicha, meaning this is something we have a besora on, a kabbalah on, we'll see if it's rabbinic or not, shenema posik in Tehillim, v'yilbash kalala kamador, and here's the key, what we were looking for, v'tavo kamayim b'kirbor, it will come like water inside him, ukashemen ba'atzmotav, and like oil in his bones. Water inside your body is connected in the pasuk with oil onto your limbs. Does that mean, therefore, that sicha is kashtia? Here it's talking about Yom Kippur. If you put oil on your arms on Yom Kippur, that is somehow equivalent to drinking, which is why you're not allowed to use soap on Yom Kippur, etc. How far does that go? Look over the page, please, number 5. So too with truma. Truma, you have a Kohen is allowed to eat truma, but he's also allowed to use truma. If there's olive oil, which is truma, which was given to a Kohen from the first tithes of the olive oil crop, a Kohen is allowed to smear it on his skin, Ashes Kohen, etc. But Yisrael is not allowed to do that. Yisrael can't take truma oil and smear it on their skin. Look, number 5. Detanya says, apostle, this one's in the Torah. V'lo yichalalo et kanshei b'nei Yisrael. Do not make chol, do not turn into a non-Kodesh object, all the Kodeshim of Bnei Yisrael, et asher yirimu l'Hashem, and all that's been lifted as truma, given as truma to Hashem, you're not allowed to make truma chol. The rabbis, this includes, says the Gemara here, es asach, someone who smears it on their body, ve et ashota, and someone who drinks it. So included in the prohibition of truma, of a non-Kohen using truma, or a Tami person using truma, is this idea of smearing on their body. Ah, shoyse lamalikra, why do I need the posik to say, don't drink it? Shtir b'chlal achila. It already told me I can't eat it. Eating and drinking are halachically the same thing. Ela l'rabos is asach k'shoyse. This posik in the Chumash tells me that if I smear it on my skin, it's as if I drank it. Sounds like it's a Torah principle. The ebois emma, alternatively, mihacha, you can learn it from this pasuk in Tehillim that we just saw, v'tavok kamayim b'kirbo, u'kashemen ba'atz motav. It comes like water inside you and oil on your bones. So Tosfos is bothered. Why did you bring me two proofs for this? Do I learn sicha kashtia, that anointing is like drinking, from the Torah, from a pasuk about truma, or do I learn it from Tehillim? Make your mind up. So the Torah, Tosfos number 6. Let's look at this quite carefully, because we'll see that this opens up the issue for us. Says Tosfos, for im taima, you might ask, do mi ikara maisi limina Torah? Originally we brought a posik from the Torah, we saw from Vayikra. The hadar, and then maisi basmachta, then we bring a rabbinic hint from a posik in Tehillim. Okay? Why do we do that? Because we learned there in Shabbos, we just saw that you're not allowed to anoint yourself on, to smear oil on Yom Kippur. Even though I can't prove it directly, it's got a hint in the pasuk in Tehillim. So you hear the question, why two psukim? Why first one with Torah and then one which is rabbinic? The Rabbeinu Tam says the following. This posek in the Torah itself is not really learning a Torah prohibition. It's very important for us. Nami asmachtehu. That is also a rabbinic hint from the psukim there. The Beperikan is Seraphim, because we learn elsewhere in Sanhedrin, Darshinam, we learn from that posek something completely different. The Tevel B'Misa, that a person is Chayiv Misa, It's a death agide shamayim if a person has tevel when they're not meant to eat tevel. So we're not learning it for this principle. This is just a rabbinic connection. Ubeperik kama dezvachim, and over there in zvachim midrash ledrash achrita. There's yet another thing we learn from this pasuk. So don't get too hung up about this pasuk in Chumash. It's not really talking about sicha kashtia. It's talking about other things. Umidoraisa loy havi sach kashosa. It's a rabbinic principle. If you smear trefus on your arms, on a rabbinic level, that might be a problem, but on a Torah level, it's not. V'chein le'in Yom Kippur, so too on Yom Kippur, that applies there rabbinically on Yom Kippur. V'teda, because I give you a proof. De'ein chayvim kareis ela oichel v'shoseh bilvad. On Yom Kippur, the two things you're not allowed to do, which are kareis, are eating and drinking. No one says you're chayv kareis if you use liquid soap on Yom Kippur. You're not allowed to, but it's not chayv kareis. And also he brings a proof from Yuma. Someone who has sores on their head, a medical problem. You can use them, you can put a treatment on them on Yom Kippur. That's not called anointing yourself. Obviously you will be able to use a cream, because you can't use creams, smear them in on Shabbos, something which is runny, etc. Yom Kippur is the same as Shabbos for this. So how could it be that you have a dispensation if you have a medical issue to put oil on your body? It's obvious you can't eat if you have a minor medical problem. You can eat on Yom Kippur if you have a serious medical problem, but not a minor one. It must be, it's the Rabbanon. And maybe it only applies to shemen, to olive oil anyway. And that's when the rabbi said there's a drabonon, akra on the posuk, va'asim drabonon. But if you want to smear pork fat on your skin, v'shel chelev, or prohibited chelev, sharia, bless you. It's perfectly permitted. And this we had last week, because we saw a Gemara last week that says if you want to smear chelev from a shorhan niskal, that's an ox which has to be killed because it had killed somebody else, that's awesome bahano, that you're not allowed to benefit from. Agabi makas, if you want to do that, potter. Aval osa, okay, this is what we were talking about last week, potter, aval osa, okay, whatever. Also, who mishum da osa bahano, you're not allowed to benefit from it. Mashma aval chelev da alma. This implies if it's not a special ox, it's a regular ox. Afilu isura leka. There is no problem. So what is Tosfos saying? And there's another Tosfos in number 7 that says a similar idea. Tosfos in Yoma, that according to Tosfos, number 1, the prohibition is rabbinic. This idea of sicha kashtia is rabbinic, not midoraisa. Although there is a suggestion in number 7 that maybe it is a doraisa. And by the way, the Rambam says that if you put oil on your body on Yom Kippur, that is a prohibition daraisa. We don't paskin like that, but the Rambam says that you can't do that on a Torah. It's not chayv kares, but it's still a Torah prohibition, which of course raises the question, well, again, like we said, if it's a Torah prohibition, how come somebody with sores on their head can put oil on? That's not a life-threatening issue. And then you'll have to get to, well, it's a Torah prohibition, but the rabbis can say when it applies and when it doesn't. I'm not getting into that now. But apparently, Tosfos holds that this doesn't apply to anything other than Yom Kippur and Truma oil. And he said explicitly, if you want to smear pork fat on your body because that makes you feel good, no problem. And there are other people also that say that. That is not part of the Isser of Sicha Kashtia. However, life is never so straightforward. And there is a whole range of other Rishonim. And I brought here number 8, the Sefer HaTruma. No relation to Truma itself. Sefer HaTruma was Rav Baruch ben Isaac of Worms, the Rivat of Worms, an early Tosafist. And he brings down this whole debate, and I won't read it inside, but I'll tell you, he says that, yes, it's mutter for people to smear stuff on their skin, but only if they need it for medical purposes. If they're just doing it letanug, if you look in the middle line, I've underlined, ein asur, this principle of Sikha Kushtia is ein asur ela ki avid letanug. And he applies this beyond Yom Kippur, beyond Truma, to any time you smear anything on your body because you enjoy it, not for medical reasons. If that thing is treif, he holds, not like Tosfos, that it's a problem all year round. It's not just a problem for Truma and Yom Kippur. How do we paskin? Do we paskin like the lenient opinions that Sicha Kashtia is only a problem Yom Kippur and Truma? Or do we paskin like the stringent opinions that it's a problem even if you want to use it the rest of the year, if you're doing it for enjoyment, not medication? So the Ramah, the Shulchan Aruch never says exactly what it wants to do on this. The Ramah, however, comes in Hilchas Shabbos. This is where life gets interesting. Look at number nine. Says the Ramah in Hilchas Shabbos, Va'asa lirchatz yadav b'melach. You're not allowed to use salt to abrasively scour your hands because the salt melts. The kasha came by Boris. You're certainly not allowed to use borit. Shikorin zayf. Anyone who speaks Yiddish, zayf is soap. You're not allowed to use soap. Everyone knows you're not allowed to use a bar of soap, hard soap on Shabbos. It's mamareach. Or b'shach chelev. You're not allowed to use any other fat, shenimuach, because they melt al yadav over your hands or having nolad. And it's a specific Shabbos problem of nolad. Not getting into now whether it's nolad, which is maybe more of a darabonon, or mamareach, or shmiring, which is a daraisa. But this is Shabbos. This is Shabbos. What about during the week? Does it sound like the Ramah puts this in Hilchas Shabbos? It sounds like this is a Shabbos problem. This is not a weekday problem. And therefore, most of the Achronim understand that the Ramah is paskening that kosher soap is not, you don't need kosher soap. The only issue with soap is a Shabbos issue. The rest of the year, he's paskening, every other day of the week, he's passing like the lenient opinions that you can shmear treifas, sarfas on your body if you want to, and it's not your problem. Yes, sir. Yes, Sichon Shabbos is absolutely permitted as long as it's runny. If you have a olive oil you want to put on your skin, there is an issue of refuah, which is if you have a minor ache or pain, you're not allowed to have anything for medication purposes on Shabbos. I'm not getting into that now, but in principle, from the perspective of smearing something, there's no problem if it's runny. If it's runny, the consistency of olive oil, I have a whole viscosity chart at home telling you at what point it becomes a Shabbos problem and at what point it's not a Shabbos problem, but that's not for now. Okay, sounds like the Ramah is lenient. The Vilna Gaon is strict. He says, okay, the Ramah is lenient. It's not a problem during the rest of the week, only on Shabbos. But he paskins like the Sefer Truma and others. He brings from other people different opinions. They bring a Lavush. The Lavush says that, okay, even if it's technically permitted, Jewish people don't like using pork. Whether it's mutter or not mutter. And it's true. People always raise these questions on, are you allowed to have a kidney transplant or a liver transplant from a pig? Now, obviously, halachically, it's perfectly fine. You're not eating it, and it's pikuach nefesh. What's there to talk about? But still, Jewish people don't like having anything to do with pigs, and therefore, the Vilna Gaon says that I hold, he says it's osa anyway, and also there are people who don't like it. What's the bottom line? So I brought you, just to go over the page for a second, do you need to have kosher soap or not? I remember once going into a shop in London, actually, it wasn't in London, it was in Birmingham, with my aunts when I was younger, and there was kosher soap. And I said, oh, that's interesting. She says, you don't need kosher soap. Don't buy kosher soap. Now, there have always been people who sell kosher soap. And I brought you here, Rokeach kosher soap. That takes you back to the old days. I'm not sure. I think that's a bar of soap. That's just for dishes? And what about this Geffen soap? This Rokeach kosher soap doesn't look as though it's for dishes. It's a bar of soap. You use it like this with over your dishes? Oh, you put it in the dish and it melts? You brush it on? Red, the red and the blue. Oh, okay. You see, there's a whole lomdus. It's a Rokeach soap. So I brought you the Mishnah Berurah and the Aruch HaShulchan. Very interesting lahalacha. The Mishnah Berurah says number 11. Look at this carefully. And then we'll move into Pesach. I'm the Bir HaGra. He says, look at the Gra. Shedat HaKadaz Harbin Migdoyle HaPoiskim, that he paskins strictly, like many of the poiskim, Da'af B'chol Asa. Even on a weekday, you can't use treif soap, Desicha Kishtia. Because Sicha Kishtia, according to the stricter opinion, applies not just Yom Kippur, not just Truma. The alcohol pot in midrabbanon osa. It's rabbinic. Don't get confused on that. Udalaika Rabbeinu Tam, but we don't paskin like Rabbeinu Tam v'siato. Shehitiru b'zelagamru, who says it's completely fine. Mihu, he says, minag ha'olam lirchatz beboris shalanu. But the minag of people out there in the street is they're not machmir. They use regular soap. Hanasi michelev, it's made from tray fat. Varak ezem medakdikim zahirim bazaar. Only very strict people buy kosher soap, he says. The imotsui lahasig boris, if you can get hold of soap, shenasim shaloi michelev, if it's made from kosher ingredients, but vadai nachon lachush ledasa machmirim bazaar. It's definitely better to be machmir on this, if you can get hold of kosher soap. But the minag is not. The minag is people use the regular soap. Why? Because they rely on the lenient opinions, which is why he says, if you can get it kosher, then do. The Aruch HaShulchan says no. The Aruch HaShulchan says that we really paskin like the strict opinion, that you can't use treifa soap. So why does everybody use treifa soap? Okay, have a look here in the third line. He brings down the Ramah, Shekasav the Bashabas Asalir Chos Baboris Mishum Noilad. Okay, Habachol Shari, the Ramah says on a weekday it's mutter. V'gamma matirim lohi tiru ragba mokam tsar. But he paskins l'chumra. Even those people who allow it, only allow it for medical reasons. If someone's in pain, kemo chatzatin, like they've got sores on their head. Amnon, however, Boris Shalanu, our soap today, shehu masriach, it stinks, he says. V'af lekelev einu roi, it's completely inedible on every level. The ein lechapogum yosemizeh. There's no more inedible product than a bar of soap. Pshita she'ein bezeh chashash afilu lebriim. There's no problem at all to use this soap. V'chein aminag poshed, and it's clear that all the people I know, he says, in Lithuania, b'chol tfutzas Yisrael, all over the Jewish people, everybody does this. Lasuch b'boris b'merchatz. Everybody uses soap in the bathroom. V'ein poitzeh peul matzavsef, and nobody says anything about it. Now, what's interesting halachically, just before we move away from Sicha Kishtia, is that the Mishnah Berurah living in Radin and the Aruch HaShulchan living in Nevardok at the same time give two different explanations as to why most people are not concerned by this. The Mishnah Berurah says that people are not concerned because they paskin like the makel opinion. And therefore, if you want to be machmir, then it's good to be machmir. And the Aruch HaShulchan says people are makel because they paskin like the stringent opinion, but the soap's completely inedible. So there's no point being stringent. There's nothing to be stringent about. It's interesting. In principle, the Aruch HaShulchan is stricter in his psak. But in practice, it turns out more lenient. Because he says the soap is so inedible, you don't even need to be worried about the strict opinion at all. Correct. There's no point in being medakdik. Medakdik for what? It's completely mutter. Now, I don't know. You could do a PhD on comparative soap use between Radin and Nevarduk in the late 19th century. I assume that they were using the same soap, basically. But I didn't look into this in any more detail because I need to get into chometz now. Let me get into chometz and we'll... You know, I understand, but those flavors have got nothing to do with real food. Those flavors that they make them smell and taste nice are completely chemical. Okay, they don't taste nice, but whatever. Ladies and gentlemen, chometz, let's get into chometz. So Sicha Kishtia, I just need to go on. Sicha Kishtia, we now know is not a problem. Either because there are lenient opinions on whom to rely, or because the thing is completely inedible, so we don't need to worry. But at least now we know a little bit about Sicha Kishtia. What about chometz, though? Chometz is osa b'hano, and that's a Torah prohibition. And if I use soap that's made from chometz, presumably that's benefiting from it, so it should be a major problem. If it's made from chometz. So let's have a look here. Number 13. This is the key source for our purposes for the next 25 minutes. Says the Shulchan Aruch. Dio, ink. Shehu mevushal b'sheichar. sa'orim, that is made, it's they boil this ink up with barley beer. Mutzer lichtov boy, you can still use it on Pesach. You can still write with it on Pesach, even though the soap is made with barley beer. The ink. I think I said ink before. The ink, which is made with barley beer. You can still write with this ink. It's not a problem. Why might you have thought it was a problem? Over the page. I mean, ink's not edible, surely. Over the page, page 5. Number 14, says the Mishnah Berurah. What might you have been worried about that you're not worried about? Number 14, v'loi chashinun, because we're not worried. Shema yishkach, maybe the scribe or the person who's writing, and by the way, writing on Chol HaMoed is itself a whole discussion. Can you or can't you? We're talking about a situation where you could, for whatever reason, on Chol HaMoed. We're not worried, shema yishkach, that the scribe or the person writing is going to forget. V'yitin kumus l'toch piv, and they'll put the quill in their mouth. People used to, as they're writing, whether it, you know, lubricated it or wet it, whatever, they'd put the quill in their mouth. K'derech ha-sofrim, like scribes do. And they'll have chametz in their mouth. Why aren't we worried? The chametz shenisham achilas kelev, because chametz which is not edible even by a dog. Ah, halo osa ba'achila, it's still osa to eat, right? Achshavei. Even if you eat something which is completely inedible, which is made of chametz, you've still put it in your mouth and eaten it. It's elevated it to a level of achshavei. No, here we're not worried. Dezeh dafke kashiachlu bekavana. That's only when you take something inedible and you say, I don't care, I'm going to eat it anyway. And you eat it. Umishum dehu achshavei, because you've elevated it. Masha'en came bezeh, but this is not the case here. Shehu shalo bekavana. You don't intend to eat the ink. You put it in your mouth to just lick the quill. Ein kapedu, we're not worried about that. So here it sounds like, even if it's chometz, but if it's inedible, if it goes in your mouth by mistake, and you didn't purposely put it in there to eat because you're weird, then that's not called achshavei. We're not worried about that. So if there's a chometz product, it sounds like, that's inedible, so we're not worried. So soap and things like that, why would you worry about it? It goes in your mouth, it's made from chometz. Fine, it's completely inedible, it's fine, yes.
I thought you were talking about benefiting from chometz.
Yeah, but it's completely inedible, it's not chometz. It's not chometz. Once it's completely inedible, I'm not anymore worrying about benefit because it's completely inedible. All I'm worrying about is eating it like achshavei, which elevates it, and that's it's an accident. And therefore, it's not a problem. However, it's not so simple because many, many, many of our products today on Pesach, cosmetic products, are made from something called denatured alcohol. Denatured alcohol has been rendered inedible by the addition of certain ingredients. Now, alcohol, which is drinkable, is very heavily taxed and very heavily regulated. So all of these cosmetic producers don't want to suddenly turn around and find that the IRS or whatever says, well, you're producing alcohol, we're going to throw a whole tax on you. And they say, well, it's shampoo, yeah, but it's alcohol. So they denature it, they make it non-drinkable by adding certain things. However, the denaturing does not change the chemical compound of the alcohol, and it can be reversed. And if you know what to do, you can turn your denatured alcohol back into alcohol. And as we'll see, there are people who do this. There are people who turn hand sanitizer back into alcohol, who turn windscreen washer back into alcohol. And therefore, since there are people who can do this, do we therefore turn around and say it is actually still edible? Most people wouldn't eat it. And right now, it's not really very edible, but some people relate to this as edible and they just fix it up by adding whatever they add. And lo and behold, you've got some bootleg, alcohol, and people drink this, okay, with your mouthwash. How do we relate to it? Yes, sir?
It's usually methyl alcohol versus ethyl alcohol.
Right. Which,
interchangeable.
Right, which is the one that people drink? Even alcoholics? People who don't care, exactly, people who don't care drink anything. So have a look at Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe was asked to Shaila. Rav Moshe was asked to Shaila. Number 15, what do we do about creams and oils on Pesach made with denatured alcohol? Look what he says. Besichas refuah sheyesh ba alcohol shel chometz l'chayle she'ein bosakana b'Pesach. Now he's talking about someone who's sick. Not dangerously sick, but sick. Someone needs a medication. They need to make up this medication on Shabbos. So look at what he says. You want to put something on your sores, beguf on your body. You're not really life-threateningly sick, so it doesn't override things. But you are in pain. Okay? And the doctor is going to mix it up and make it with this denatured alcohol. Made of chometz. And he says, Shikvoy Taras, Taras Ahara Yakar, you, this is the way he calls the person who asked, you paskin that it's okay. What does Rav Moshe say? Yafahara, you paskin correctly. I hold that it's okay for a sick person. Why? Do mitzad issa sicha b'isurim, when it comes to sicha, meaning anointing, aflas sovrim de sicha kashtia, hu b'chol isurim b'chol minim, even though there are opinions which we just saw, that sicha kashtia, that smearing something generally on your body is prohibited all year round, not just on Yom Kippur. Yafa kasav, you've written correctly, mimachane Ephraim, you quoted from the machane Ephraim, de hudavka sicha shel tanuk. Even the people who are strict on sicha kashtia, that's when you're doing it for pleasure. Everyone agrees when you're doing it for medical reasons, it's fine. Umitzad issa hana, kemen she'eichel ma'achal adam, and since it's not edible at all, ye mutzah b'hana. And sicha kashtia, we're not worried about. But what about Pesach? The alcohol atzma k'shehu be'ein, but this denatured alcohol, which is in a raw state, lo nechshav nifsal mechila, I don't think that's inedible. I think that's edible. She'yesh minochrim, there are non-Jews, and maybe even Jews, they mix it with other things, they fix it up, and they drink it. He says, look at the Rambam, if you don't do it in a normal way, then it's okay. You can put it on your body, if it's made of chametz. That's not the normal way of doing it. Because you're sick, we'll allow you to do this. Therefore, if you're in pain, to do this on Pesach, HaMashiach, you can make it up, you can ask a non-Jew to make it up and you can put it on your body. Why can you put it on your body? Not because it's inedible, forget about it. It's edible. It's really chometz. But it's not the normal way of using this chometz. And therefore, you're sick and you can do it. Like we said last week, if it's not the normal way of doing it, and someone who's a chole, even a lesser level chole, they can do it. But to use it in the shower for shampoo, chas v'chalila, you're using edible chametz. You wouldn't eat it, but there are people out there who would eat it. And therefore, it sounds like Rav Feinstein is not happy for a healthy person to use these products. And indeed, Rav Shimon Ida, when I was younger, Rav Shimon Ida's Halachas of Pesach was one of the go-to works in English on the Halachas of Pesach. Still an excellent book. He brings down that this prohibition is Rav Moshe, Rav Issa Zalman Meltzer, Rav Aaron Kotler, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky. Now, it's hard to know whether they said it was Osa Mi'ikar Hadin, that it's actually Osa, or whether they said best not to, because these are oral, if you like, accounts. But nevertheless, we know from Rav Moshe, and certainly Rav Shimon Ida says that it is definitely a problem. Rav Svi Pesach Frank was dealing with the question of denatured alcohol that people wanted to use for cooking fuel. They're not going to put it on their body, but they're going to use it. Are you allowed to use chametz on Pesach when it's still drinkable? And he paskins no. He says, since it can be easily reconstituted into regular alcohol, or at least edible alcohol, then it's not halachically inedible and you cannot use it. And I brought you on page 6, which I'm not going to go through in detail. I put quite a lot of footnotes into this shir, so you can look at it later. I had a lot of fun making it. I brought you 4 reasons why people are strict and 4 reasons why people are not strict. And you can think about them as we go through them. Here's a reason to be strict. Number one, you say, come on, it's inedible. I'm a sugar, turn it into, but it's inedible. So not so fast. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach points out that we may consider things to be inedible because we're very fussy and we won't eat anything unless it's perfect. But there's a halacha in Hilchas Machshirim. Okay, Machshirim is, in order for a food to be makabel tumah, to pick up, be susceptible to tumah, it has to have been first wet. And it has to have been wet with a liquid which is considered edible, drinkable. Royal achila. And if you look in the Rambam's list of liquids which are considered to be royal achila, he lists earwax, nose mucus, and urine. Excuse me for being, the morning. But he lists them, says Rav Shlomo Zalman. You see, just because you don't think these things are edible, it doesn't mean they're not edible. Maybe they are edible. Not that people normally eat them, but they're edible. So first of all, don't be so quick to say something's inedible. Maybe we're just very finicky. Number two, just because it's inedible now, surely everybody would accept that if you can do something very easily to it, to make it edible, then that doesn't count as inedible. Take raw pasta. Raw pasta is inedible. So you're going to tell me, oh, I can use raw pasta on Pesach. It's completely inedible. The answer is, of course it's inedible, but drop it in a pan for 10 minutes and it's completely edible. So why is denatured alcohol different from raw pasta? It's made from chametz. Right now it's inedible. I can do something to it very quickly and make it edible. So that's a reason why people say it is edible. And I brought you in the notes. There's a source in Erevin that says bitter almonds are considered edible in halacha to make for an Erev, because you can easily just roast them very easily and they will become edible. So that's another reason. Thirdly, we say that a food which becomes completely inedible is no longer called chametz. Well, maybe that's only because it was edible but became inedible. So there's an argument that runs, which maybe if it was never edible, it was never intended to be consumed, it was never a food, maybe the exemption or the heter of it's now inedible doesn't count, because it never was meant to be edible. It was meant to be fuel. It was meant to be soap. So I understand a piece of bread which was meant to be food and is now completely moldy that it's not edible. Okay, it's no longer what it used to be. But chametz, which was designed for soap, for something else, who says you can apply that argument? Maybe it was never meant to be edible. And finally, I brought you, and here we get to the alcoholic dog. The Minchas Alaza, the Munkat Sharov, says he wants to be more lenient with this chametz, denatured alcohol on Pesach. Why? Because he says the following. The people who want to be strict say, look, Nifsal Ma'achilas Kelev means if a dog would normally eat this, but now even a dog wouldn't eat it, then that's called not chametz. But what if a dog would never eat it? Even if it was perfect, maybe you can't use that. And since a dog would never drink alcohol, so too, you can't say that alcohol is inedible because a dog wouldn't eat it. A dog would never eat it if it was whiskey. Give your dog Glenfiddich, it won't eat it. And therefore, you can't use that argument. Chas v'chalil. Depends how old it is. Okay? Talisker, you know, 57 North, give to your dog. Your dog won't eat it. Says the Munkat Sharov, not so poshut. There's a Gemara in Rosh Hashanah about a dog that was trained to drink alcohol. There is? It's amazing. One of my Rosh Yeshiva says, you know, you can't argue that Judaism has all the answers, but Judaism for sure asks all the questions. Yeah? Meaning a dog, he talks about a dog that you train to drink alcohol. So say the Machmirim, yeah, that's a Meshuggah dog. That's that, you, we, like we say, Botla Data Mikol Adam. Like, weird people don't take account of them in halacha. So maybe this is batla data, we call kelev. You train them, and says the Minchas Alaza, no, dogs do what you train them to do. They do crazy things. If you train them, they do what you tell them. If you train them to drink Glenfiddich, they'll drink Glenfiddich. And therefore, he says he doesn't like that argument. So for all of these reasons, the people who want to be strict, there are answers to their arguments. What about the people who want to be lenient? So there are a number of arguments here, and the lenient opinion is Rav Avadia Yosef is lenient. He says denatured alcohol is inedible. Rav Soloveitchik was lenient. Denatured alcohol is inedible. And they say, look, you can't compare it, number one, to raw pasta. Raw pasta is normally cooked. That's how normally people relate to it. But denatured alcohol is not normally natured again or renatured in order to be edible. You can't compare the two. To which people will say, well, how do you define normal? What's called normal? And the Gemara actually has a very fascinating example of this. The Gemara talks about the issue of people around the world, the B'nai Hutzel, the Gemara in Shabbos. The B'nai Hutzel carried everything on their head. They had a particular thing for carrying things on their head. Does that mean if you carry on your head, that's now the normal way of carrying? Because there are people in Hutzel that carry on Shabbos, if there's no Erev. If I carry things on my head, is that now called carrying? So the Gemara says, nah, the B'nai Hutzel, batla data mikol adam. They're just very strange. They do things, normal people wouldn't carry things on their head. So then Tosfos says, well, what's called normal? Let's say there are people in the world who do weird things, but not because they're weird, but because they live in a weird place. The Arabs, for example, the Gemara there says, Arabs grow thorns and thistles. And therefore, for them, that's a normal crop. Why do they grow thorns and thistles? To feed their camels. Camels like eating that. Now, you and I, living in Europe or America, we don't grow thorns and thistles. But if we lived in Saudi Arabia, maybe we would. So that's called normal. It's not normal for you because you don't live there. So too, denatured alcohol. 12 million Russians, it's estimated, make alcohol out of denatured alcohol. And I brought you a list of here from medical ethanol, from window cleaners, from windscreen wash, and from perfume. 12 million people making illegal alcohol from these things. So you'll say, well, they're not normal. So maybe the answer is, well, you wouldn't do that because you live in Yerushalayim. But maybe if you lived in Siberia, you would do that. Oh, well, it's not so poshered, because maybe that's a normal way of doing things. You can't say it's abnormal. So there's a whole argument there as to what's normal and what's abnormal. But the two other arguments which run are actually, I think, more fundamental. Number one is, not all products which are cosmetics are made from chometz. A lot of them are made from denatured alcohol, which is made from other things. I brought you with the number three in page six here. A lot of denatured alcohol comes from sugar, corn, other carbohydrates. Not necessarily from chometz. For example, in America, corn is the major crop, and therefore the denatured alcohol, the ethanol, is made from corn. In Brazil, it's often made from sugarcane. Therefore, it's very hard to know, even if the product has denatured alcohol, is this really chometz, or is this from something completely innocent? I don't care if from corn. Corn is kidneys. There's no problem with using kidneys in this way. And I brought you in the footnote there. It's very difficult to know. And someone actually called up the manufacturer here of these products and said, like, which alcohol did you use? And they say, well, we don't know. It was made 6-8 months ago, and people use whatever is cheapest on the market at the time. Maybe made from grain, maybe made from sugar, maybe made from corn. And it's very hard to know, but that's another element of Suffolk there. Rav Avadia used to be Mekel because he said most of the denatured alcohol in Israel was synthetic. Okay, but that was then. Is that now? Who knows? Because products and production methods change. And then, lastly, just go over to page 7, there's the last argument to be lenient, potentially, which is, okay, so this opens up a whole can of worms, which is alcohol even chometz? And if you remember, we had a shear on this a few years ago, which is there is an argument, and it's run by some of the achronim, that since alcohol is made through distilling, it's called Zeya Ba'alma. It's not the actual beer, like barley beer. It's made from barley. But alcohol is distilled and then what do you call it? They recondensate or recondensed. It's vaporized and recondensed. So maybe it loses its shame chometz. And therefore, what are you worried about at all? Now, if that's the case, you can enjoy your Glenfiddich on Pesach. And the answer is, no poskim hold that it's actually mutter to drink whiskey on Pesach. And the Mishnah Berurah, by the way, rejects the argument completely. The Mishnah Berurah says, we paskim that distilled and recondensed is completely chometz gomor. Totally, totally, totally. However, I think I mentioned in the shiur that I gave a few years ago, there was a case of the river versus Ephraim. Rav Ephraim Greenblatt, one of the Talmidim of Rav Moshe Feinstein, he was asked a shaila by a Baal Tshuva, who became more religious, became more observant, and then someone told him that your entire whiskey collection, tens of thousands of dollars of very expensive whiskey, all has to be poured down the sink. Why? Because it was all owned by a Jew on Pesach. Who? You! When you were not religious. Now you're observant. Now you know it's all chometz shavar alav Pesach. Down the sink we go. And he said, oh, okay. Nobody told me that when I went to the Kirov seminar, you know? They talked to me about cholent, but they never talked to me about pouring my whiskey away. And the River of Ephraim said that he was allowed to rely on the Mekel opinions that maybe, you know, he wouldn't be allowed to drink it on Pesach, but maybe for the rabbinic prohibition of getting benefit from chometz, which was owned by a Jew on Pesach, maybe that's not a problem. And also, was the knas, was the fine, if you like, the penalty that you have to get rid of chometz, was that set for even for people who don't care? And there's a whole, and if you go back to that Dashir, we talked about that there. Okay, fine. So there are machmirim, there are mekilim. In practice, many poskim recommend that one shouldn't use certain cosmetics found in liquid cosmetics, which had alcohol, and this would include liquid sprays, roll-on deodorants, hairsprays, perfumes, colognes, shaving lotion, aftershave, mouthwash. We'll get back to mouthwash soon. And these things have often SD written on the ingredients, which is special denatured, or SDA, special denatured alcohol. However, even according to those poskim, and Rav Shimon Ida, as I mentioned, is strict, like Rav Moshe, the denatured alcohol is edible, drinkable. He says, when it's mamasha product like a cream, and I brought you a list here of things that are not even convertible to alcohol. Blush, rouge, body soap, cream, eyeshadow, eyeliner, face powder, foot powder, ink, lotions, mascara, nail polish remover, ointment, hand lotion, salves, paint, shampoo, stick deodorant, shoe polish, and paint. He says, there, no one has to worry. Because there, even if you want to try and turn your mascara into alcohol, even in Siberia, they can't do that. And therefore, that's not happening. And therefore, they allow those. Many poskim, and I've asked Shilas on this to my own poskim, are completely lenient on the whole thing. And said, no, you like the Psak of Rav Avadia, Psak of Rav Moshe Feinstein, of Rav Soloveitchik, we're not worried about denatured alcohol. As far as we're concerned, it's inedible. You don't need to put your perfumes away at all. And therefore, you need to ask a Shaila. But there are definitely grounds for a lenient Psak or a stringent Psak on this particular issue. I want to just mention four things before we finish, which are all things that we actually do put in our mouths, meaning mascara. I'm not a big mascara person myself, but it's not meant to go in your mouth, okay? If it goes in your mouth, then you're doing something wrong with the mascara, okay? But there are things, and I've listed them here, dish soap, lipstick, mouthwash, and toothpaste, which do go in your mouth. So I brought you, and just let me mention these quickly. Rav Moshe has a tshuva about dish soap during the year and on Pesach, and he basically says it's inedible, but his lashon is ein la'asor l'nakot b'boreh she'as anaseh me'alkohol. I can't aser it. I can't prohibit it. It's really me'ikad din, it's mutter. From which Rabbi Ida says, well, you see, he didn't say it was permitted. He said he doesn't have a reason to not allow it. And therefore, Rabbi Ida says, and it's a good deal, Rav Moshe says mutter when he means mutter, and he says here, ein la'asor. Therefore, Rabbi Ida says it sounds from Rav Moshe that one should use only washing up liquid with a heksher. Other people say, no, absolutely not. It's completely inedible. You do not need dish soap or washing up liquid with a heksher at all. That's one issue. Lipstick, all year round, and for Pesach. Okay, some people are more machmeh on Pesach because they're more machmeh with everything on Pesach. Lipstick, Rav Shimon Ida says, completely inedible. Even if it goes in your mouth, it's inedible. However, flavored lipsticks, he said, okay, that may be more edible, and therefore he recommends not to use flavored lipsticks on Pesach. Some people want to use a new lipstick stick for Pesach. I remember many years ago, Diane Lopian, Zecher Tzadik Livracha in London, doing a little bit of a demonstration of how you put lipstick on with your mouth like this, and how whether that's called achila or not achila. I remember it to this day. So to be a Diane, you have to know how to put lipstick on. It's chashev. Mouthwash. There are poskim who say, okay, denatured alcohol, it's drinkable. You don't drink mouthwash, other people mamash do. And therefore, they say that you have to have a heksher on your mouthwash, certainly on Pesach. But others say, no, Rav Hershel Schechter says that all mouthwash is fundamentally inedible, and therefore it's mutzah. Some people distinguish between mouthwash that tastes good, like mint, mouthwash that tastes of medicine, that's not good. But Rav Schechter, as I say, is completely makel. Finally, toothpaste. Toothpaste is more complicated than you think. Toothpaste has a lot of ingredients in it which may come from treif ingredients. It used to be the case, the CRC has a whole article that I read, it used to be that the majority ingredient in toothpaste was calcium carbonate, which is the abrasive that rubs your teeth. And that was more than 50%. And the calcium carbonate is not treif at all, it's just a chemical, it's just a mineral. However, now, they don't use calcium carbonate, they use something else. What do they use now? I put it here. I can't remember where. I can't find it right now. They use something else. Hydrated silica. Okay? Hydrated silica. And apparently, hydrated silica is much better, much more abrasive than calcium carbonate. And it only needs to be a minority ingredient now in order to do the trick. So he says, therefore, Rav Belsky turned around and said, it could be that you have to get kosher toothpaste the whole year round now, because the majority ingredient in your toothpaste is now potentially actually treif, and therefore you're not allowed to use that. Other people say, no, it's completely inedible. Again, Rav Schechter, I want to finish with Rav Schechter, number 18, I'll read it very quickly. Rav Schechter has a psak here that appears on the OU website, and he said he heard it from Rav Breuer. Rav Yosef Breuer in Washington Heights was asked to give a heksher for toothpaste. Look at number 18, we'll finish. Ha toothpaste, says Rav Schechter. Gam kein nifsal hu miachilas adam. It's completely inedible. Ka'ashe kvar katafti bedaf akashe. I've already written that in other places. The ein kan inyan shel achshavei. There's no achshavei with toothpaste. You're not eating it. V'chein shemati b'shema Rav Yosef Breuer. I heard from Rav Yosef Breuer in his name. Shemien liten hechsher lechevrat Edwi. How do you pronounce it? Edwi? Add we? I'm English. I don't know from Adwi. So Adwi toothpaste, they asked him to give them a hechsher on Pesach, and he refused. The toothpaste al Pesach. Why? Ki hayasavar, because he said, Me'ike hadin ein sarach lezeh, shiyah kosher. Me'ike hadin is kosher. Okay. V'chashash, and he was worried, Shema chavred Adwi yivshetu et haregel. Maybe Adwi will go bust between this Pesach and next Pesach. V'ha'olam yizkru, and people will remember, shelifnei shana, that last year, haya ha'hechsher shal Rav Broya ala toothpaste. Last year we all bought toothpaste with a hechsher. U'beshanazo, and this year when there's no toothpaste with a hechsher, kvar einu kaim toothpaste in hechsher, that we can't get hold of it. V'yimnu milishtamish b'toothpaste b'pesach, and no one's going to brush their teeth for a whole week on Pesach. V'edzel loratzad, he was a yeker, and he ain't having people who don't brush their teeth on Pesach. That's not happening. And because of that, he wouldn't give toothpaste to Hechsher, because he doesn't need a Hechsher. Interesting. Interesting psak. Rav Avadia, there's a story of Rav Avadia. A woman came to Rav Avadia and said, is this Pesach kosher? Is this toothpaste kosher la Pesach? He said, yes, of course. She goes, but it's not written there. So he gets a pen, he says, kosher la Pesach. He writes it. He says, now it's written. Are you happy now? So you see, with toothpaste, most people are makel, but hopefully that gives us some of the understandings of these issues. Next week, Karpas, Be'ezrat Hashem.